All right, it's time now to bring in Yogi Roth, football analyst for the Pac-12 Networks. He joins us on the Sprint special guest line. Lease any phone and get an iPad or Samsung Tab A for $99.99. Visit the Sprint store nearest you. Yogi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, you know, adjusting to the new normal, as is everybody else. And I wonder what that means for Yogi Roth. I assume that means you've gone back and watched cut-ups of every Pac-12 game all year. Am I right?
It hasn't happened exactly like that. You know, I've been able to become a preschool teacher to our 5-year-old now. So we kick off school about 9:30 every morning. And then we go for a couple hours. And in the afternoon, I get some good tape in, which is fun because he's been watching it with me. So I haven't gotten through every game, but it's definitely been fun to kind of watch some of the meaningful ones back. And you look at some teams that are losing some key players, and you start to imagine what you hoped you would have seen in the spring. And then, of course, I've been talking to some coaches about, what does quote-unquote spring even look like now. So, days haven't been exactly the same every single day, at least for the first week or so of this.
Did I see you on social media, Yogi, say you were practicing intermittent fasting and about 90 minutes into your first one, you were starving to death?
That's pretty fair, to be quite honest with you. My wife does that all the time. And so I've done it. I've had my stints where I, make it a day, or I make it, 4 days, or I make it 2 weeks, and then I'll see, Kyle Whittingham. I'll get inspired, and I'll try to see if I can carry it out. But I'm a breakfast guy. I really don't even need another meal the rest of the day. I need a breakfast and then, a latte or something midday, and then I'm usually pretty good.
Well, then you're already intermittent fasting if you don't eat after breakfast until breakfast the next day.
That's a great point. I always thought it was you got to do it at 6 o'clock at night to noon or whatever it is. But yeah, you're right. I'm gonna tell my wife this after this. I'm basically just doing it in reverse.
I think most people do it that way just because they find it easier. You've slept through overnight, so there's 8 hours or so, and you get up and if you skip breakfast, that's just I think a lot of Americans are already skipping breakfast, so it's the easiest one to do. All right, so
agreed.
We're looking at the we've just been talking about this. We were looking at the spring predictions. You see what recruiting classes come in and who might be able to plug in a transfer or a freshman or something, and who's got depth and who needs a new quarterback. And so you rank the six teams in the Pac-12 South, and it seems like the Utes are routinely being picked second or third. I don't see how that can be on the strength of their roster. They got to replace almost the whole defense, plus the quarterback, the star running back, and the left tackle on offense. So it seems to me that's more an evaluation of the strength in a program, and that's people dismissing chronic weaknesses in programs at UCLA, Arizona, and Colorado. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I made the mistake last year. I thought, UW would win the Norris. That's what I picked to kick off the season. And obviously was wrong, and it was based on historicals, right? It was, the consistency of Chris Peterson, the consistency of replacing players. They've done it before, right? You think about, they lost Buda Baker, replaced him with Taylor Rapp, and they lose Taylor Rapp and replace him with Elijah Molden. You don't think it's going to change. But the reality is they lost, I think it was 10 of 11 or something like that on the defenses, or 9 of 11 last year heading into the season. Very similar to Utah, and you're right. This conference is just brutal when you look at the way the schedule is laid out. The good thing for Utah this year, other than obviously kicking off with the BYU, it's Montana State, Wyoming, two games they should go get before they play Cal. But it's kind of what happened to UW last year too. If you think about it, when they lost that crazy game that went till about 2:30 in the morning or so. I'm a little I'm apprehensive to go down that road now of the program just doesn't flinch. They'll just reload and away they go. You have to recognize greatest defense in my era of calling games on the Pac-12 networks. I think that was the best defense, when you look at individual personnel, because a lot of guys are going to end up finding their way to the league, or how they played cohesively as a unit. So I do think they've got, they'll get picked high, but they got to reload, and not having the spring, at least presumably, is going to be difficult in that regard, regarding the team and the 15 practices or whatever they would go get to figure out the depth chart, but let alone really understand and be able to play fast. And a lot of teams are going to be in that hole, so it might net out, but a lack of experience at some key spots I think will be something for Utah that I'll look at. But I still think they're one of the best. They're a top four program in this conference, you know, defending South champs twice. You know, SC's loaded coming back. But they got to do the same thing on defense, per se, at least from a scheme standpoint, even though they return their players.
When you look at the loss of spring ball, Yogi, I'm wondering who you think it affects the most, because you've got a number of programs having new coaches, if not head coach, then coordinators. And then also, too, you got teams trying to replace quarterbacks. And then you got somebody like the Utes, who seems like, particularly on defense, they're trying to replace everybody. So who do you think is hurting the most, or do you think it just washes out?
I don't think it washes out. I mean, I look at teams like UCLA. You know, this is a team, year three, Chip Kelly, right? I always think of, like, Baylor, year three. I think they were, like, 11-2 they finished, I think, last year. You know, and they started at 1-11, I believe, the first year under Matt Rhule. So here's a UCLA team that was dangerous, you know, the last 2 years of Chip Kelly, right? They beat SC his first year. You know, last year they had, you know, some really competitive games. You know, they went through that stretch prior to heading into Utah, but they didn't go to a bowl game. So they haven't really doing anything in like legit football, you know, with pads on for a while. So I look at a team like that where you're trying to really, you know, maintain momentum, the drive from not achieving, you know, a bowl game or any postseason success. I think it hurts those teams. You know, same thing with like an Arizona, you know, and then I look at Colorado, you know, with brand new staff, you know, quarterbacks who I thought they was going to start there, Blake Stenstrom, entered the transfer portal. You know, they got a mid-year enrollee from Texas who is a beast, but we all know what that means. You know, it's still a different world. So I think those teams, and then even Washington State, you know, the run and shoot, I played in it. It is my favorite offense, I've admitted many times in the game, but it's based on reps, you know. And granted, in the past game, like, you can get those with your guys in off-season workouts, but we don't even know when those will be allowed to occur. So I'd go with those four teams. You know, a team like Stanford, you know, where they got in, you know, a week and a half of practice. You know, Davis Mills was dealing. So for a team that didn't have a bowl game, like, mitigated, you know, because of that factor, and they were able to play a little bit. But I look at those, you know, initial teams that I referenced where I think it's going to be hard for them.
You know, I'm really interested. We're talking with Yogi Roth here from the Pac-12 Networks. I'm really interested in USC because it seems to me like they could be several different teams. It seems like the frontline talent is there. It seems like, off what I've read about the recruiting, the depth might not be. So they might be pretty good early on. But if they have injuries, how well could they ride out that storm? And how fragile are they? You know, as long as things are going well, that's great. But how fragile are they if something starts to go wrong? Because I wondered that a year ago, and they took some hits early. They finished strong, but they couldn't quite catch the Utes.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting year, right? Like, last year was kind of like teams had two byes. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't really happen for everybody this year, you know, including, you know, SC in that regard. So they have one basically in the middle of the season to kind of reload and regroup. And if you bookend it, they start with Bama and end with Notre Dame. You know, not the easiest of roads, and that's what SC's about, right? I mean, they even canceled their game against UC Davis. I think it was for next year because, you know, SC's one of two schools or three schools in the country to never play an FCS opponent. Regardless of that, their reality is the following for me, and I've been around them the most in the offseason just from a natural proximity standpoint and being around the program and hosting a couple events for them. You know, this team's dialed in, man. I mean, this team's locked. They're loaded offensively. We know what they are. You know, the receivers that they lost, or at least in Michael Pittman Jr., obviously it's a loss, but Kyle Ford and Brew McCoy would start everywhere in the country for the most part, you know, at least be a part of the conversation, and they're going to be fighting for reps. So they're loaded on offense. They got five running backs. Their offensive line in this system is good enough. It's way above average in that regard. I get they have to replace Austin Jackson, who, you know, we'll see where he gets drafted, but everything seems like he's a first-round pick. But they've got consistency on that side of the ball. Defensively, it's been really interesting because Clay Helton doesn't have one coach on his staff that he had day one when he became the full-time head coach. But everybody there, whether it was an offensive player or a defensive player, and I was just with JT Daniels, Talanoa Hufanga, their quarterback and safety, and they talked about how they felt the staff and just a different type of discipline there. And I think that is going to be great for the program. I think it makes guys prove that, you know, they're worthy of playing. And they've got veteran players, to your earlier point. You know, they got one of the best linebackers, I think, in the conference, Palaiea, now Teote. They've got defensive linemen that you guys know better than anybody, Jay Tufele. You know, like they've got talent all over the roster. If they can become mature talent, which they haven't been in a while, then they're going to be dangerous, you know. And that, to me, is what spring would have been great for. Because in L.A., you know, or just society in general, it's built on being an individual to a large degree. And if SC can get the talented individuals to play cohesively as a unit, like Utah did last couple of years on defense, and really how they have, in a, you know, for the Kyle Whittingham tenure, they're going to be super dangerous. So right now, I would pick them if you had to pick somebody in the South based on the losses at Utah. I was bummed I didn't get to watch them in spring ball, but I think that they'll be as dangerous as anybody, because early on when teams are struggling, you know this as well as I do, teams are going to struggle on defense. It's going to be communication. It's going to be splits. It's going to be alignments, just in terms of not having screen ball, not having these reps, you know, even not having the strength and conditioning. But offensively, like, they're going to be able to move the ball. You know, they're going to be dealing quarterback, whoever it ends up becoming, whether it's Keaton or JT, they're going to be just fine. So I think early on in the year, they'll be dangerous if they can, you know, be mentally mature, because they're going to have to be, obviously, with week one tilt against Alabama.
What do you think the loss looks like it's heading that way of spring ball is going to do to impact training camp when it starts in August?
It's a great question. I've been banging around with Ted Robinson on our podcast, and I think that I don't want to project too hard, right? Like, I'm not in any conversations with any campus officials or conference officials, but if you play this thing out just based on the news last night, right, of, you know, how serious this is first and foremost, and, you know, how groups of people larger than, you know, in some countries, it can't be more than two, right? We're talking about a sport where, you know, there's a team in every conference on average, I would imagine, that gets some sort of, you know, God forbid, staph infection or flu or something passes through a locker room, and it passes through football faster than anything. Because you got 105, 115 guys in training camp, you know, constantly connected, whether it's like legitimately physically because they're contacting each other in drills, or within, you know, a 3-foot proximity just in the locker room, or, you know, all the things of that nature. So I think it's going to impact it. And then you look at the physicality, and I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, how are guys working out right now? Like, we know they're really driven, right? I don't think football players, at least at the highest of levels and the highest of programs, they're not lazy individuals, right? Coaches are super anal and organized. So kids have their workouts. So they're doing 1,000 push-ups or burpees or whatever it is that they're doing. They're doing their best to remain in shape. But the reality is I think that if you don't do anything in terms of an organized team activity, weight room, running, conditioning, you can't come back August 1st and just, or in Pac-12 situation, July 26th, 27th, 28th is when most teams were projected to start training camp, and just start laying the wood. And you just can't do it. You know, your body will break. You know, think about what teams have already done to curtail training camp to make sure that they're ready to peak, you know, in week one of the season. They're going to have to curtail it even more, which is tough. So I think, you know, if it's me, I'm saying maybe we come back and it's a 3-week organized team activity, right, which is like 7-on-7 drills, mat drills, movement drills, get your body right, and then maybe it's in a bridge training camp, and maybe we lose a game or two, and the season gets going in that regard. If this thing goes as at least projected as of last night's news, that might be an option if you had to lose games. Hopefully not. You know, hopefully this is under control in the next couple months, and, you know, kids can get back on campus and, you know, continue to, you know, feed their bodies and, you know, and all the stuff that I'm sure you guys have talked about. But there's so many unintended elements of this from a student-athlete standpoint, from a health and wellness, first and foremost, with COVID-19, let alone then you look at the athlete and the performance and how are they training, how are they feeding their bodies, how are they sleeping, all the amazing things that each campus has that obviously now is not part of the day-to-day of a student-athlete's life.
So is recruiting down to phone calls when allowed and texting and social media posts?
Yeah, I think recruiting is going to be interesting now. You know, we saw one of the top quarterbacks in the country commit to Oregon last week. I saw him at the Elite 11. I think it was like one of the final Elite 11s that we had before, you know, suspending the camp circuit. I think so. I think it's going to naturally do that. I think, though, that is going to be a, you know, one of the positives that come out of this. You know, coaches, obviously, and everyone having to be quarantined with their families. You know, it's a terrible circumstance, but not being on the road in May will be okay. You know, they'll survive that. I think from an athlete standpoint of, you know, all the quote-unquote love that they would get, and a lot of it is unnecessary, in my opinion. You know, maybe that shifts things back a little towards normalcy in terms of, you know, a little bit of balance in college football and the profession, let alone in recruiting. And, you know, or you're going to go the opposite, and teams are just going to take big risks and just start offering guys that, you know, they only have seen on junior tape and haven't been able to walk by and size up. And I hope in the programs I've talked to, a lot of people are kind of slowing down to a certain degree and saying, hey, we're going to be just fine. Like, we'll get through it. You know, there's been, you know, 92 years, 93 years of college football. You know, you could argue even longer than that. Maybe it's 142, 143 years of college football where they had recruiting that didn't have like a crazy social media and in-person element. So I think the sport will be just fine, but it will impact teams that were able to get on guys early, get them to campus, get a silent commit, but I don't think anything is going to, like, tear down programs and have to rebuild, and you lose a whole recruiting class based on what's going on right now.
I'm wondering if this situation will limit the impact of newcomers, whether they be JC guys or freshmen who get on campus in August, because the coaches, they might not have time to give them the individual instruction and maybe go more with veteran guys. Do you see a forecast like that possibly happening?
100%. Yeah, 100%. I mean, the redshirt rule is a brilliant rule overall, and it's an even better rule regarding the situation that you just outlined. Because you're going to have to ease guys in. You know, I mean, that's just the reality of it. You know, you can't burn out their bodies. You know, I've always felt this. We did this with Reggie Bush when he came to SC, and I still think it's the best way to bring in JC players, first-year players, transfer first-year players, is to give them one, two, or three things to learn, right? So if it's running back, it's, you know, hey, I want you to learn outside zone, and I want you to learn an angle route and a wheel route, you know, for instance. That's it, you know, and that's all you give them. Receiver, we used to do it with guys when they come in SC, whether it was Mike Williams, Dwayne Jarrett, Patrick Turner, you name the guys that came in, it was learn a slant, learn a post, and learn a fade. And the fade was the hardest one to teach, to be quite honest with you, because of all the, you know, nuances of the route. And then you go from there. Okay, and then by week three, week four, you get a bye, and they get to take a breath and, you know, relax and teach them a little bit more. But I do think that if you're counting on, you know, a freshman quarterback, for instance, it's hard right now. Because all these guys came in mid-year, right? And they're doing everything they can. They're in their books. They're Skyping or FaceTiming with their coach, you know, or Zooming. Like, they're doing, but you can't replace the reps. You know, it's just a reality to the sport. So I do think there's an element there. And you'll probably see teams, you know, be more conservative, you know, especially if teams are loaded on the defensive side, right? You know, I look at Washington as an example, right? They bring in a new offensive coordinator. They're going to play a guy who's never played meaningful snaps in a game. You know, I take that back. I think one of the quarterbacks had one meaningful snap because the helmet of Jacob Eason came off last year in a game that I was calling, you know, in Sermon. So overall, they're going to play with great defense, you know, run the football. And that's kind of how Jimmy Lake's outlined his approach anyway, but you can't, I don't say you can't, but you're not very confident in terms of throwing out a guy who's, you know, call it, has had 28 practices. You know, it's still, it's not zero, but it's still not a lot of, it's a trust factor, you know, that I think the coaches are all going to have to deal with, but everybody's going to deal with it, to be quite honest with you. So it's a simplification of the playbook. It's a simplification of the decision-making of, you know, the respective player. And then it's, I think, probably playing really conservative. And I would bet that most of training camp, at least the first 10 days of it this year, with more individual periods than we've ever seen in the history of training camps to that point, just to kind of drill home, you know, some of those elements that win and lose you ball games, which are explosive plays, which usually bust, and turnovers, which speak for themselves.
Yogi, as always, we appreciate a few minutes with you. Thanks for checking in, and good luck in your new career as a kindergarten teacher.
Hey, we got a big science experiment. If you have any, hit me up, because I'm literally Googling every night, like, kid science experiment, and that's our 11 a.m. break before we get a little rest time. So kick him over, please. I need all the help I can get.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Networks, right here on 97.5 and 1280 The Zone.